of the NLC. Remember, the NLC is a regulator and also a funder. We have instilled the culture of maintenance of strong internal controls. The way how we work, a person comes with an application. If the application does not meet the criteria in terms of filling in the forms, submission of IDs and whatever, we don't accept such a form. A person is turned back, or there and there we have created a help desk in all the provinces. A person can be helped how to fill in the form and what are the documents that are needed. Well, this is the fourth year or fifth year, if I'm not mistaken, the commissioner will correct me. We have been obtaining clean audits. I mentioned this statement somewhere. I said I'm not an auditor. I'm an educationist and a musician. So those who provide clean audit, they've studied for the clean audit. I can't even remember negotiating with them to say, please help us. This year, they visited almost all projects that you have seen in the media, because we wanted to have another side of the story. Well, it's a debate. We can debate outside this hall if there are people who are challenging the clean audits that the NLC obtained. Operational efficiencies, elimination of historic applications backlog. I remember there was a march by a political party to our office because of the backlog, and the money in our NLDTF was way beyond 6 billion, which means somewhere in 2010, we were not efficient in distributing that money because it belongs to the communities. So by now, I think with the help of our shareholder, the DTI, the Act allows us to stay with an application for 150 days only. That 150 days, there must be an adjudication, controls, measures, and payment. Unless otherwise, but if we don't do that, the Auditor General makes a finding. So the fact that there is no finding, it means there is no project that has stayed in our systems for more than 150 days. In terms of payment, we are guided by the Act. I think it's 60 days. We must have paid within 60 days. When it comes to regulation and funding for impact, 23 billion in funding for worthy causes has been granted. We have facilitated economic empowerment with 4.1 billion. 1,576 millionaires created through national lottery system. I'm happy we are in the mother city wherein the highest winner comes from 232 million went to a truck driver. So which means the famous Tata Machans, Tata Mamillion, one day is one day, panda pusher play is working. We more than 431 million procurement spent to BEE companies, more than 67 million procurement spend to youth in the recent years. Organizations that have got youth, over 4.9 million procurement spent on persons with disabilities. In our distributing agencies, Honorable Chairperson, the Chairperson of Charity is a person with who's living with disability. The Arts and Culture Distributing Agency, there is a member who is living with disability, and we are able to gel well with these people. We want to make sure that the organization runs according to the statutes of the government. My last slide is what we do and who we serve. The NLC is the sole regulator for lotteries and sports pools in South Africa. The NLC is also the largest grant funder, reaching up to more than 3,000 beneficiaries. We are governed by the mandate that we get from this committee and the parliament. That is the mandate. The NLC has the sole mandate to regulate and prohibit lotteries that are not regulated. The second mandate is legislative mandate to ensure that the national lottery and sports pools are conducted with all due propriety and strictly in accordance with the Constitution. I'm sure you are aware, Chairperson, that the current operator had a problem some few days, and the matter went to court. The NLC went there as a friend of court just to present what we know about the license without taking sides. I'm happy to announce that judgment was passed yesterday. The NLC, the license that the NLC adjudicated under my leadership still stands as unchallenged. It means we have done the correct thing. The other processes will still go ahead, but we are happy that the current national lottery operator, Ituva, well, one of the aspects that made us to know that this is the correct operator was that they are going to invigorate lottery in South Africa. And here we are, the lottery is invigorated. Lastly, I want, because I think the commissioner and other members will go on with the presentation, I must make the Honorable Chairperson and members aware that yesterday we saw something amazing on the screen. Media went to picture the toilet that we have never built. So I came here with the correct picture of the toilets we have built. That one was talking about the toilets we have not built. We don't know even the school, but the toilets we have built are as follows. Can you show them? These are the toilets that we have built in Limpopo and in Eastern Cape. Lastly, Honorable Chairperson, because these are people's money, I would request your indulgence. Can you give us two members so that this week we go and see what the NLC has built, so that we don't defend ourselves. We allow those who can write to write. They are given skills to write, but we allow them to come and see, and we are inviting everyone to come and see these toilets. They have been built by Envirolu. It's a very big company, a white-owned company, which does not compromise on the standard. And the Department of Education, Eastern Cape, Department of Education in Limpopo, they've written letters to congratulate the NLC. Well, we are happy that maybe the toilets that we saw in the TV is another way of NLC to go and build the proper toilets. They've given us the areas where we can, at least it's a positive aspect. I will ask the commissioner to go and visit them. We don't know the area, but I think she will go. Thank you very much for allowing me to introduce the annual report of the NLC. Over to you, Commissioner.
Okay, we will actually have Commissioner. I think because we're looking at the time, we'll just maybe, I'm even trying to get the committee to try and be observant. So I'm not sure if we can be able to ask you to take 20 minutes for a presentation. Is it too tight? 30 minutes? Yeah. Between 10 and 20, 20 and 30
okay.
minutes, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. We will try, Chair. We will try to go through the slides as quickly as we possibly can, because I take it that Chair and Honourable Members would have had an opportunity to go through the annual report as well as the presentation. Chair, because also this is almost a new committee, except for one face that I recognized as having been there, Mr. McPherson. I thought it was important for us to take the committee through the strategic overview of the organization so that all the things that are in the annual report can then make sense. Our strategy at a glance, our vision is to be a catalyst for social upliftment. Our mission is to regulate all lotteries and sports pools with integrity and ensure the protection of all participants, to maximize revenue for good causes in a responsible manner, and to distribute funds equitably and expeditiously. Our values are integrity, and that has to do with being honest, open, accessible, and fair in all our dealings, decisions, and actions. The second one is performance excellence, and it is about taking ownership of our responsibilities to work effectively, efficiently, with professionalism, and ensure a positive, sustainable impact on the communities we serve. On service excellence, it is to provide a level of service which is of high quality, target-based, and meets the expectations of all our stakeholders. And on social consciousness, that value is important. We say it's to be sensitive to the needs of the community in order to initiate social upliftment. Continuing with the strategic overview, we've tried to summarize after the vision, mission, values, and vision, mission, and values, we've tried to summarize then our ultimate outcomes, and we are saying one of them is to be competent, capable, and relevant lottery industry. That's what we would like to see happening. The second one is to be compliant and to have a compliant and regulated lottery industry receptive to the NLC mandate. And the third one is to make sure that there is fair and equitable distribution of grant funding. Our strategic objectives are four, and from the objectives then we have programs which in most cases are also informed by the performance indicators. But the objectives are effective and efficient administration of the National Lotteries Commission, the financial sustainability control and discipline in line with applicable legislation, initiatives geared towards ensuring compliance with the Lotteries Act, as well as to ensure that we distribute funds in a fair and equitable manner. The performance indicators are illustrated there. I want to inform the members that for the past 5 years. We've also had a 100% performance audited by AG, which came out of this strategic overview. We are saying one is collaborative partnership, education and awareness campaigns, integrated enterprise-wide architecture, corporate governance, NLDTF disbursements. Now, NLDTF is National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund, and my colleagues will talk to that a lot later. Implementation of the investment strategy. The investment strategy came about because there would have been a time when there was a problem with the issuing of the second lottery license for 6 months. There was no lottery operator. So after that incident, as a way of making sure that we cushion any risk in case anything was to happen to the lottery operator, we have investments that will ensure that if there's no revenue, there's nothing coming in for a year, the organization will be sustainable and will continue to distribute funds to good causes. I think it is a known fact that the NLC is not receiving any allocation from the fiscus. The other one under regulatory compliance is combating illegal lotteries, monitoring the performance of the national lottery operator against the license conditions and society lotteries. We also have targets that talk to the 150 days turnaround time for applications, the 5% distribution across all provinces to ensure equitable distribution, monitoring and evaluating site visits, and impact evaluation studies that we had to conduct in order to make sure that the funding that is allocated to our beneficiaries changes the lives of those who receive them or who receive the service from the beneficiaries. The operational mandate is on page 9, and you will see there, I will not start with the TUBA. Let me start with the National Lotteries Commission, that we provide regulatory oversight over the national lottery operator, and the operator is Ituba. I heard Prof calling them out nicely, Panda Pusha Play. Other lotteries, sports pools, administrators and administers and adjudicate grant applications. Ituba, you will know that from the mandate that the NLC has of regulating the lottery and sports pools. There was then the arrangement during the licensing process where a percentage of the sales of lottery tickets had to be negotiated. At the moment, it's 26 to 27 on a sliding scale that we receive from the operator. We fund NGOs, NPOs, NPCs, and community-based organizations. We have four sectors that are legislated to distribute funds. The first one is arts and culture. It is receiving 23% of the total budget. The budget ranges between 1.5 billion to 1.6 billion at any given time. And charities gets 47% of that. 28% goes to sports and 2% goes to miscellaneous. I will skip some of the slides that are not important. You see, to be sitting next to the chair members, it's not easy, Chair. I promise to abide by this. And our geographical footprint is illustrated there. You will see how we are performing in the different provinces. Members, the slide is clear. I will not read it out to you. I hope you'll be able to see it. The next slide, which is slide 11, is continuing to explain our core regulatory activities as well as our core grant funding activities. And I'm not sure whether there's anything I need to add after illustrating how the funds necessarily flow from the operator into the regulator and how that arrangement is actually concretized during negotiations for the license operator. Members, I will leave other slides. I think they are self-explanatory and will hand over to our legal executive to take you through further information on operations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greeting to the members. Thanks, Commissioner. I'm going to go high level and try not to repeat what has already been said by Prof and Commissioner. But I think of importance is that, as Chair and Commissioner said, when you look at the NLC, it's very important to understand the structure of this organization. The NLC is a regulator of lotteries and sports pools in South Africa. And there's quite a couple of issues that it needs to deal with. One of them is the issue of illegal lotteries. Now, it's important to understand this because when we deal with issues where we engage provincial gambling boards around, you know, activities that are of a gambling nature, you know, authorized by provinces, we always have to come back to this to say, look, if you look at Schedule 4 of the Constitution, it's very clear. Lotteries and sports pools are a national mandate. That is very important. And the other activity of the NLC, which is a grant funding activity, is actually a secondary responsibility of the organization. So that is quite important because as I go through, I'll just unpack some of the challenges that the NLC will normally raise, ordinarily raise, to say you are a regulator, but the legislation within which you operate becomes very expensive to implement because every time when there are issues that you need to deal with, you must approach the courts, because you would not be having those powers directly from the act that you implement. Now, this is important. The first slide talks about the Regulatory Compliance Division. As a regulator of sport pools and lotteries, the NLC has a dedicated structure within, you know, it's within the commission, which deals specifically with policing of the conditions of the license. So you would have people who, on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, report on the, you know, the operator and how it operates and whether participants are protected. And not only that, it's quite important to understand this in a bigger picture to say, as you're regulating this, there are a lot of illegal lotteries that are, you know, being conducted throughout the country. You have some that you have to obviously approach the court now and then because they would be having for sometimes bookmakers' licenses. But then if you look at what the Lotteries Act says, the Lotteries Act clearly identifies what is an illegal lottery. And the Constitution defines the fact that the responsibility for managing lotteries and sports pools is a national competence which falls within the NLC. And when you deal with these issues, you need to unpack this thing from the you know, from the start to say we have to take this particular position because this is what the law requires of us, and this is actually something that is constitutionally declared. Now, we've got a division. I'm not going to go into some of the slides, but if you look at those you know, blocks there, the intention was just to explain that normally we talk about the national lottery. Currently we know that it's Ituba, and it talks about the process. Every 6 to 8 years there will be an RFP, it will be adjudicated, and the license will be awarded. But we need to stress as well that there are other society lotteries and private lotteries as well that the commission is responsible for you know, licensing. And the commission has its own processes, and as it goes out to teach the public about the Act and its implementation, we also need to deal with that as well to say the focus, you know, when people think of the National Lotteries Commission, which is wrong, and that is the thing that we need to correct going forward, people think of the National Lotteries Commission as a grant funder. But people need to understand that the commission is there as a regulator of lotteries and sports pools, and that out of the little that it gets, because it gets around 1.6 billion or so annually, there are other opportunities of society and private lotteries that our societies and our communities and our stakeholders need to be, you know, capacitated on, to be made aware of, because if you are able to leverage on that, you know, or those other licenses that are there, you might just create a situation where there's no over-reliance on that 1.6 billion, because if you look at the problems that we have in this country, 1.6 billion will never be enough. So I think part of our focus going forward is to position this NLC properly to say this is a regulator and these are other regulatory activities that it does, and there is this important responsibility of ensuring that you don't allow others to come in and cannibalize, you know, the position or take over or dilute the positioning of the current regulator operator because it's a monopoly. But it's very important so that when you move on, we need to position the NLC properly to say, firstly, it's a regulator. Out of its regulatory activities, it then gets all these funds that goes into NLDTF that are then ultimately distributed for good causes. Now, I was trying to explain the first part, which I think is important. It's about the regulatory mandate of the NLC. Now, out of that regulatory mandate, and I'm going to make this very simple. The Commissioner said the NLC does not get funds from the fiscus, and that is quite true. Once somebody is given a license, ordinarily, the money that you are talking about is the 10 rand that an ordinary South African walks into the shop and buys a lottery ticket with the hope of winning. That money then goes into a trust that is called the National Lotteries Participant Trust, and there's a reason for that. And I like making this example, this simplistic example. If you decide to play, the lottery that is going to be played tomorrow and you pay your 100 rands today, that money does not belong to the operator. So that money moves directly from the hands of the operator into a trust. If I decide to cancel my bet tomorrow morning, I have that money. It's not with the operator. I'll only lose that 100 rand after the operator draws the dice and I lose, you know. So the money is very safe. So this is quite key, and this is, these are some of the messages that we need to go out. When we say part of our responsibility that we take very serious is the protection of participants, that is what you're talking about. On an ordinary day, millions of rands are sitting in this trust, governed by trustees, run independently, and the operator will only come in after, you know, rolling, and some people would have lost, and then they will say, look, this is the calculation, we're actually entitled to 70 million out of that fund. It is only then that the money will then be released from the trust to the operator. So the NLC is doing that quite well. And we've got these trustees that are independent and that are reporting to the board. Now, ordinarily, and I'm into this slide now that talks about grant funding. The NLC, for some reason or the other, it has come to be known, I think, all the years. I mean, surely there are reasons for that. They have come to be known as a grant funder. You know, you talk about the NLC, people think this is about grant funding. But, after 2015, there were a couple of changes to the law, and I'll just talk through that. Ordinarily, when you look for funds from the NLC, or when you want the NLC to be, I'm talking the NLC, but there are many components within, and I'll just explain some of them. Ordinarily, all funding allocated would be application-based. So an NPO from Matrageville will come and say, we are running an orphanage, we'd like to get operational costs, a car and this and that and this and that. And this application goes through the system of the NLC, through administration. Ultimately, it sits before the committees that we call distributing agencies, which are independent committees that will then take the decision whether to allocate or not to allocate. And that is very key because if you go into the Lotteries Act and you go to the regulations that we operate under, you realize that all the processes of the NLC are so prescribed. Currently, even the time period that you take to, you know, make a decision on the application is prescribed, and I think Commissioner touched on some of those. But it is very important then, if you look at that slide, to explain something else. Ordinarily, like I said, application-based. But when the law was changed in 2013, with the 2015 promulgation, there was a new system of allocation that was brought about by the new Act, and we call this proactive funding. But if you look at the Act, it's actually research-based funding. And I assume this would have been the reason behind this. If you look at years back from 2010, 2012, and this and that, you had this NLC that was such an important entity, having such a lot of money. I mean, at some point, the NLC would be having some 4 to 6 billion that is not distributed. But it could not do anything about that because the system was prescribed such that it was reactive, if I may put it that way. The NLC could not initiate anything. If you don't receive applications, for instance, from the Northern Cape, you might even fail to get the minimum percentage that needs to be allocated to Northern Cape. Now, because of that, this was introduced, and this is in the nutshell what this new system says. If you look at Section 283 of the Lottery Act, it says, it is allowed. Application-based aside, normal, it will still run. But the minister, the board, or the commission in consultation with the board could, based on research, fund worthy good causes without following prescribed processes. And, you know, when Prof was talking about issues around the media and this and that, this is the, you know, the issue that has been coming up and down, coming up to say, you know, maybe there's a problem in terms of how this works. Now, the law says to us, you can fund after research, but you don't have to follow any prescribed process. But the NLC went further to say, we are going to create a proactive funding framework. Because as an entity of state, you have to explain your process. You have to be accountable. You have to be transparent. And what happens currently is that research will be done. There's a R&D division within the NLC. Research will be done. But after that research is done, this, you know, identified worthy good causes would still go through, you know, the process of assurance by committees that are designed or formed in terms of this framework. And these committees are composed by the same members of the distributing agencies that would look at your ordinary applications. So Chair, I think this, you know, that is just to give an explanation around that. And within the systems, you've got your monitoring and evaluation and reporting. And so I'll just explain the structure of the funding, the two systems, one application-based and one proactive. Now, Chair, I won't go into the details of some of these other slides, but it explains the different portions of the, or different the areas of the NLC in terms of ultimately pushing and achieving its objectives. We've got monitoring and evaluation, there's marketing and communications, because part of what the law says is that we need to create you know, awareness, we need to capacitate, so we need to be spending money going out to tell our stakeholders what we are and the services that we offer as the Commission. And, you know, there's a dedicated research and development unit within, and there are provincial offices in all the 9 provinces where our people will go in, or our stakeholders, or potential beneficiaries will go in for any assistance regarding funding. Now, just to mention while passing, the NLC has also spent some money in improving its ICT to ensure efficiency and effectiveness, and a lot of money has been spent in that to make sure that you can coordinate all the activities from a central point, and there are discussions already of ensuring that we simplify the process further and, in fact, allow people to even apply online, you know, because, I mean, if you look at this country and the areas where we've got provincial offices, you still find a lot of problems in terms of access. Chair, I'm going to end there. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take you through the performance information. I think a lot has been said, Chair, in that in the current year, the AG would have made pronouncements on how our targets are firstly determined in terms of treasury frameworks and on whether we have achieved as we had reported. And I'm going to report to the members that we had achieved 100% performance against our predetermined objectives in the current year. And you will see in the bubbles, we just amplify a few highlights for the year under review, which is 31 March 2019. 107 education and awareness campaigns were rolled out. 100% of illegal lotteries were investigated and closed. And these are the illegal lotteries that were referred to earlier on that do impact negatively on the pot that is available for distribution. Then 598 million national lottery tickets were sold by the operator. And we've had positive governance review outcomes and a number of board stakeholder engagements as the board also continues to direct and ensure that we are indeed perceived and seen as a regulator first and a funder. Chair, I'll go to the next slide in the interest of time. The slide really details on how we have performed against the targets that are in the different strategic objectives that Commissioner referred to earlier on. There are 4 strategic objectives, and we maintained and achieved all of them. The first one being that of ensuring that we establish collaborative partnerships with key national stakeholders. The issue of education and awareness is it emanates from the Act, Chair, in that we are bound to ensure that we educate all stakeholders, relevant stakeholders around our mandate and how we regulate and how they can access funding. And we managed to have 187 stakeholder engagement. The e-system is the ERP that was referred to earlier on, in ensuring that we are modernizing as an organization and therefore use resources optimally. And in that year, we targeted that we have, we develop an online portal, which was achieved. On corporate governance, ethics is seen as a very key important contributor to how we actually perform. We don't only perform, but we ensure that we perform ethically. And therefore, we had interventions that ensure that all employees are aware of what is required of them from an ethical perspective in the organization. Then if I move over to the next strategic objective, which is to ensure financial sustainability, control and discipline. The first would have been to ensure that we pay our beneficiaries within the regulated time frames, which is 60 days, and maximizing on our NLDTF investments to ensure that we have we are sustainable. And our target in that year was 8%, and we've achieved 8.42%. Localized procurement is one of the key things that we monitor in terms of our procurement strategy, and this ensures that when we procure in the different provinces that we have a footprint in, that it is the people of that province that benefit. And in that year, 99% of our procurement benefited the people of the respective provinces. The third lottery license is to ensure that as we execute our mandate of regulator, we ensure that the operator complies with the conditions of the license. And currently it is an 8-year license that commenced in 2015, Chair. Society lotteries is one of the alternate revenue streams that we try and educate our NPOs, which we fund, so that they use that as a stream to sustain themselves and therefore ensure that we as a funder, we have a maximum money that we can take to the people on the ground. And in that year, we registered a number of them, and you will see in the financial information the impact of this alternate revenue stream had in that financial year. Then if we look at the adjudication, was 150 days target, which is also a regulated time period within which we should adjudicate applications that are received, and in that year 98.3% of applications were adjudicated within the time frames. The next important one, Chair, is around equitable distribution of our funding, which is also regulated in that at least 5% of our budget is allocated to every province. And we've seen a really good move recently in that some of the smaller provinces are also accessing these funds. And all provinces may achieve this minimum 5%, and you can see how this distribution happened in the financial year per province in the slide. Monitoring and evaluation is quite key. And you will see the number of visits that we had undertaken to ensure that what we fund indeed is monitored in terms of what was intended for the funding. If I may move over to the next slide, which talks to financial information. Chair, I'll take you through the highlights. Once again, in the current year, we received a clean audit from the Auditor General. for both the consolidated, or rather all the entities. We've got the consolidation, which consolidates the NLC, the NLDTF, the trust fund that we talked to in a number of slides, as well as the trust that legal executive talked to earlier on, where the funds for winners and advanced plays are kept safe for the interest of protecting all the participants. If I may just quickly take you through the highlights. In the year under review, we received 1.6 billion in the trust from the operator, which is mainly from the share of ticket sales in terms of an agreed percentage in the license agreement with the operator. Operating costs were 463, which are pretty much in line with what we incurred in the prior year, and this is goes to the efforts that the entity drives in ensuring that we contain costs. Allocation of grants in the year under review amounted to 1.3 billion. I'll move on to the next slide. I think our chairman talked to this issue. I think we've had a lot of focus recently to ensure that we do not have backlogs, and this is also evident in the numbers. You will see that the provision for allocation is basically monies that we would have had in our books that are due and payable to beneficiaries, and you see a really good decrease over the past 3 years in what we would have had. This was because we had implemented policies to ensure that as quickly as possible our beneficiaries are receiving the funds that they would have been approved for. A decrease of 51% from the previous year, and a fast tracking of payments as indicated earlier on. And indeed, let's not forget the impact of monitoring and evaluation on these figures. Cash, physical cash paid amounted to 1.5 billion. I've talked to investments, and unclaimed and expired prizes would be those prizes that are in the trust, and participants or players and winners in particular have 365 days to claim their winning tickets. And if that is not done, the license then determines that those funds then are destined for good cause, which then are filtered back to the communities. Unexpired and unclaimed prizes would be what still was within the validity period of 365 days for claiming, which amounted to 269 million in that year. Revenue through fundraising is the society lotteries that the NPOs are running. So this is how much they would have managed to raise through the registered schemes with the national lotteries, which we monitor, and we bring that integrity to the game or to the scheme. So when you do play or when you do offer to buy a ticket, you know that it is registered and it is a scheme that you can trust because it's regulated by the lotteries. And in that year, we saw a huge increase from 20 million to 52 million, which was raised by organizations. Society lotteries is the same issue, is the same kind of organizations, but how much they would have paid to register with us. It's very, very negligent. It's just to ensure that they put in a form with us and they are on our register of regulated schemes. Very quickly, I'll take you through our statement of financial performance, which was audited by the AG, and the statement of financial performance really looks at what were the kinds of revenue streams that we had in the year, as well as the type of expenditure that the organization has. I'll really summarize, Chair. But in the main, we don't get funding from the fiscus, and you will see that the major part of our revenue comes from share of ticket sales. In total, we received 1.9 billion and 1.6 of that came from the share of ticket sales, and the rest would have been mainly our revenue that came from investments and interest. Then perhaps let me touch on what else sits in our expenditure. The big item there, as you'll see, talks to our second mandate, allocation of grants under the line item, under the big item expenditure. In the year, we would have allocated 1.2 billion. Then employee costs is self-explanatory, goods and services, mainly just for operations which are sitting in the NLC entity. Then depreciation is just the amount of monies that would have been expensed over a year, over a couple of years when we buy fixed assets. Then there's a small amount there, Chair, that talks to disposals of our own assets through internally. Then, very high level, what is it that sits in our balance sheet as old terminology, but it's now statement of financial position. In the main, the big items there are the investments that we have, which is 1.5 billion, and you have your normal property, plants and equipment that assists with the running, day-to-day running of our operations. And on current assets would be mainly your cash and cash equivalents on hand, what sits in the bank, and the liabilities in the main I've talked to earlier on is what would have remained unpaid to beneficiaries as at 31 March 2019. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The committee requested an update on the performance of the National Lottery License and the impact thereof of NLC's regulation. The operator had 7 billion sales, share in ticket sales for the 2018-19 period. In that, there were 1.6 billion contributions made to the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund. There were 168 jackpot prize winners in the 2018-19 financial period. As the regulator, we oversaw over 676 reviews that are conducted at the draw results and publication of the lottery results, but also we do prize share verifications. There were 52 reviews of weekly transfers to the unclaimed prizes to be secured in the NLPT, which is the National Lottery Participant Trust. These are the regulatory dimensions that the NLC uses to monitor the National Lottery operator, which are detailed in the report before you. What we would like to bring to the policymakers' attention is the key challenges that are faced by the NLC as we continue to roll out the mandate of the NLC. The first one we highlighted in the report is the one of conflicting beneficiaries. Whilst we've highlighted challenges, the NLC has made and continues to make inroads in that with conflicting beneficiaries, the NLC will endeavor to mediate between beneficiaries. Often these matters, if not successfully mediated, lead to criminal investigations and litigation amongst conflicting beneficiaries. The NLC, though, continues to provide capacity building to beneficiaries in order to ensure that beneficiaries understand and adopt sound corporate governance practices within their organizations. The NLC, the NLDTF is facing pressure due to economic conditions, but the NLC continues to look for innovative measures to maximize on the revenue. Whilst we encourage and channel our valued beneficiaries to explore other forms of funding through society lotteries and private lotteries as was previously presented. In terms of interpretation of legislation being Section 2A or what is called proactive funding, we still find that stakeholders remain challenged in understanding this provision of the Act. We've provided a detailed overview and the corporate governance framework of the proactive funding model in the report, but the NLC does continue to educate the public so that they understand this method of funding. In terms of challenges in regulations, the NLC board took a proactive step in engaging with provincial gambling boards to try and address the challenges that are faced by the NLC in combating illegal lotteries, particularly from foreign lotteries due to technological online platforms and online gaming. The NLC is also undergoing a process of reviewing the legislation so that to make inputs to the policy makers. To close the presentation on the integrated report, NLC would like to report to the committee the successful audit outcomes, where the National Lotteries Commission separate obtained an unqualified audit with no findings. The NLC consolidated, the NLDTF and the National Lottery Participant Trust also had unqualified audits with no findings. The AGSA has noted that overall audit outcome has remained clean as a result of having the right skill set in key management positions, a leadership that drives a culture of sound corporate governance and the maintenance of strong internal controls throughout the financial periods. There were no findings on the main compliance focus areas, as well as the audit of predetermined objectives. The AG opined that quality of financial statements and performance was commended. There were no audit adjustments to the financial statements and the report on performance information. They concluded to say that the overall financial viability of the NLC is good and that all assurance service providers, being senior management, internal audit, the audit committee, the board and the minister, were assessed as having provided reasonable assurance. I will hand over to the commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I must negotiate time with you. I think I did well with the 20 minutes that you allocated us. Thank you, Chair. We have the second quarter report. I wanted to find out from the Chair and honourable members how we are doing with time and whether, you know.
We will actually ask that to actually deal with that, because obviously I think it will be unfair not to allow you to actually finalise a presentation. Yeah, if you can actually maybe conclude on that. Let's hear Mafisa.
Can I just have an understanding then that we're going to have sufficient time to pose questions and for questions to be answered? We're not going to pose questions and then run off.
Well, I think it's a point which I think we had a slight discussion before you came in. I did actually circulate to members questions, responses, which I think on my part I thought it will be good to allow members to ask questions and maybe get commitment from the commission to be able to actually get responses in writing to the questions. So I'm just saying that's the option we actually can create, McPherson, because I think actually that will be actually the only option that we do have at this stage because of the time we have as a committee. So do you have any suggestions?
Yes, with respect, there's some very serious issues that do need to be asked and answered in the session. The questions are from the Fifth Parliament. I'm not prepared to wait until the Seventh Parliament to get the answers from the Sixth Parliament. So I, with respect, think that there's some issues we need to deal with in the audit report, and maybe we can set some time aside going forward to deal with the second quarterly report. But we must have a discussion and question and answer session on what's been said so far.
Okay, I think that's the issue. I thought maybe I can check the members if ever they're comfortable. Because on my part, I think not being actually given the opportunity to ask questions will be a problem. It will be important that we do that, but the point of being able to actually get responses, it actually takes more time. Obviously, I think one would actually ask for advice. You heard what McPherson is saying, let's take Mbuyane and then come to Yako.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. As we're speaking now, we are showing time. But my proposal is that let us continue and see where we end. So we'll continue and take it from there. We can't anticipate question and answer session that this was going to happen and stuff. So let us continue with the program and see by 1:30 if you can do it. Then that will be. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. So I think take Yako.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm of the view that we take the first session now. I think Honourable McPherson's chest is burning to say some things. And we schedule a second session, because this is the first time I'm interrogating the NOC. So definitely there's going to be issues that are going to come up. So I propose that we let the second session be moved to another date, where we can then consolidate, if the questions aren't properly answered, can consolidate those reports with the second session so that things can move smoothly.
So the suggestion is that you say we will actually ask and answer questions?
I'm saying that we ask questions on this first session now and we try and get answers from that, and then we do schedule a second date, whereas if there's issues arising, they will be answered in conjunction with the second phase of the report in that next session, so that everybody's satisfied.
Okay. Can we then actually, I'm not sure in terms of second quarter, our members saying we don't actually go for that part. Carpet?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I second that proposal that we have a second session, because I think we need to be given an adequate part at the first presentation, and if we're going to rush the process, then we might as well pack up shop and go home, because it's not going to be meaningful. So I think let's agree as a committee that we'll host a second session where they can come and present the second quarter report.
So I think there were actually spaces that we may have to look at before we actually have the commission going, because there might be a point that we actually have to set the second session. If ever members are comfortable that we try and get the second session, accept the report as presented by the commission now, and then maybe allow the questions and answer session, we'd actually then take it right now and leave the second quarter part. So I think that is like consensus for the committee members. Okay. All right. So I think Chairperson and the team would actually then ask that with the presentation that you have done, we actually then be allowed opportunity as the committee to interact with that detail, and maybe for the second quarter be able to try and find time to actually pick up from that. So I think maybe we can actually take the concluding remark. I don't know if ever you're actually going to conclude first in terms of the input relating to what you have actually just presented to us. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Not much, really, except to say that is the NLC's annual report 18-19, and to that extent, we've had a lot of developments around that. Not that we went all out to source what is going to be happening. We are listed in the last four performing organizations for the business Leaders Awards sometime in November, and not that only, we've had an international commendation for our integrated report, and that is also in the finalists of the integrated report awards that will also take place in November. Thank you.
Can I then actually take comments or questions for clarity from members? McPherson, Jaco Hermans and Motse Daung and Thring, last one Mbuya, in that order.
Thank you very much. Now, what I've heard this up until this mid-morning, specifically from the professor, is that there exists some idea or campaign or conspiracy to put the NLC into bad light, misleading articles and news like. Now, my experience is, dealing with entities, that where there is public discourse around the way that a entity is being run or managed, and there are accusations of malfeasance, those usually prove to be correct. Now, up until this point, the NLC has done a very bad job at refuting some of the very serious allegations that have been made against it. And you have stated that you are, you know, one of the big things that you are interested in is sound corporate governance at the NLC. And you had a slide there that was titled, What We Do and Who We Serve. Now, Professor, I'd like to put a question to you. What corporate governance allows you to remain the chairperson after your term expired, non-renewable term expired in August of this year? What are you relying on to stay in the chair, and why has it not been vacated? Why has you haven't spoken at all about the forensic audit in the NLC. Why is it taking so long, and when will it be completed, and who is doing the forensic audit? For the first time in your history, you took a decision not to release the beneficiaries in your annual report. I would argue that that is not in the interests of corporate governance, and in fact is not in the interest of transparency with your customers, who are the general public, and Parliament, that is your stakeholder. So I would ask you to please, without further delay, table and submit a report to this committee on the beneficiaries for the 2018-2019 annual report. It is absolutely critical that you provide that list to this committee. I'd also like to know why no one from the NLC and the DTI who aren't here saw fit not to communicate or brief or update this committee in the litigious actions between HCI and Ituba. I would have thought that would have been of critical importance for this committee to understand that on the papers appears to be a backdoor takeover and take a license which was never granted to another company. That is of critical importance and which has not been communicated with this committee.
Do we stick to 2 minutes?
I'm going to wrap up my last
one.
You said that we must be interested in what you have built, but I'm more interested in what hasn't been built. And there are still massive questions about a company called Denze, which has received payments of 27 million rand, of which 11 million rand was spent on a luxury house on a golf course in Pretoria. No one can explain to us how the NLC paid money to an organization which then bought a luxury house.
Thank you, Mr.
Including the rehabilitation centers that have not been finished, the old age homes that have not been finished. I'm interested in what hasn't been done and what the NLC are doing to correct it.
Okay, the carpet. Okay, three. You had your hand up.
Yeah, Chair, I think from my side, perhaps a fairly simplistic question, and there's been argument that the challenge that National Lotteries Commission presents when it comes to communities in particular is that it seems to suck up available funding from those particular communities. which then gets channeled into the National Lottery Commission for distribution. And we have some NGOs that have been in existence for many years and suddenly find that they are now starting to experience financial challenges because many of their previous funders say, no, well, we are now giving to, or the National Lottery Commission must take care of you. And so how many of those particular NGOs, there are some children, you know, NGOs that take care of the welfare of children, there's Childline that have been experiencing some financial challenges. How many other NGOs are experiencing challenges that you are assisting or are not able to assist because of maybe your financial challenges? Thank you, Jim.
Echo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm really glad that Honorable McPherson got to air his chest, because I think most of the time we sit in this committee and we engage on the report. However, the DA always has other questions which do not pertain to the report. But of course, they are entitled to ask their questions. Now, I want to ride over his question. I've got many questions that I have here. Some have been answered. I want to ride over what he said. He spoke about a term of office for the chairperson. I'd like to know what is a legislated term of office for the chairperson. Secondly, he asked for a list of beneficiaries who benefit from the lotteries fund. Now, I'd like to also, in that report, have a detailed legislative ruling which maybe protects or doesn't protect the beneficiaries from being exposed. Thirdly, I'd like to ask, in terms of the media reports that have been circulating, there's many more things that we don't know as this committee. And I'd like to ask the National Lotteries Board to furnish us with future any pending media or legal issues that are going to come for us to interrogate prior to that, so that we are at peace of what is happening. I'd also like you had measurements there where you said you did 2.5, you did an oversight on 2,500 sites that you funded. Now, I wanted to understand year on year, what is the average of a project that is finished by the National Lotteries Board? And also, riding on that, how do you then make sure that not the same beneficiary benefits from the National Board, from your funding that you give to beneficiaries? What are your measures that you put in place there? And speaking also to what Honorable McPherson spoke about with ITUBA, I think in HCR, I wanted to know, does it really now, the chairperson spoke about it being one, ITUBA one. Now, I wanted to understand, does that stand, or will it just carry on, or will there be a rider on that? Is there more that we must see as a committee? The second last thing, I wanted to ask, how do you plan on prioritizing women in gaming? Because I don't think we have, or I've seen space where women are thriving in the gaming space. And secondly, you did allude to the fact that there is illegal gambling, and gambling that takes place in terms of your international lotteries that actually get money from South Africa. So a lot of money is leaving South Africa, but we're not benefiting from it. How do you plan on regulating that? And what is the timeline that you plan on giving us so that it doesn't carry on and we sit in the 7th Parliament and we're still facing the same thing? Sorry, I'm done with the questions.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you for the presentation from the NLC, and thank you for the good work that you are doing in making sure that NGOs and other organizations in need are funded. I think all the questions that have come, I'm sure the team will be able to answer, because it relates in actual fact to their mandate. I just, as a person like Honorable Yako's first encountered is with the NLC, would just like for them to explain, there's DTI, there's distributing agency, there's the NLC, there's the operator. It's like, you know, it's, if they can just like put it in perspective for us, how do they relate to each other in terms of carrying out their mandate. And then also the question of the sports gambling, which is an internationally very big industry. I mean, how is it regulated in South Africa? Because Honorable Yaka also spoke about, you know, money is leaving South Africa. And then also the trust fund. I heard the explanation around the fact that when it was created, when there was a 6 months where there was no operator, but now it's still there. Why is it being kept if there is an operator, and who decides on the projects that will be funded? How is that money being used? I heard that there's a 6 billion in the fund at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation from the Commission. My question is, how are the beneficiaries from the provinces determined by the NLC? And also, do you have the awareness campaigns, especially in rural areas where our people are staying, for them to get the more information about the funding? And also, what are the illegal lottery operators and who is licensing them? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation with a good outcome, audit outcome. I'm having only a few questions. My first question will be, what are the opportunities that our emerging entrepreneurs can be empowered with by NLC? Secondly, how does the NLC distribute funds equitably in the whole country? The last one, what is the time? No, when is NLC open for the applications when one wants to apply for some assistance? Yes, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. It's difficult to be the last one to speak, but I'll at least re-emphasize on the issue of ETUBA and HIC to say if the NLC knows about this matter, do they have any strategy or plan in resolving this conflict between ETUBA and HCI, I meant to say. And also, there are two models of funding. I need clarity on the proactive funding. How is they doing and how is the approach and what informs that funding, so that we are able to understand exactly the normal one of application and the proactive funding of the NLC. And also, maybe to check in terms of education and awareness program. Do they have that program rolled out in all provinces so that people, they know if they need funding, how they are going to apply, where are their offices located per province? Just that information, because it's very, very much important. And also, I'm not so sure, because lottery, in terms of the Act, only the lottery commission that is allowed to license. So I was wondering if they can clarify to us as to who are other people that they are licensing, that they are contradicting all these matters. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I will actually then say, ask the prof and the team to respond to issued questions raised. Is there another? Okay. Thring did actually, you did raise a point, yes. Okay. So let me just say then, on my part, I know that there's a process which actually is engaged with the ministry and the chair in terms of just candidacy of chairpersonship. But I'm sure in terms of questions that actually are coming up, one would actually allow the chair to actually speak to those issues. You're free to do so. But the other one as well, which is very interesting, just on the beneficiary list, I did actually get a direct communication with one of the journalists who were asking me that question. I'm happy that McPherson was able to ask the same question, which I'm sure you are going to be able to assist us on. Thank you very much. Floor is yours, Prof, and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson. very valuable questions that came from honorable members. I will just take a few questions, but the rest of the members will answer. Honorable McPherson, the act, the one that you have given me, says when you apply to be a board member, you apply for a term, and the term is 5 years. Renewable if the minister appoints you again. I applied in 2009. I got the job for 5 years. And when we were busy doing the license, which was won by Ituba, the minister, without me requesting additional years, because I'm educated, I've got 2 PhDs. I knew my time is ending on the fifth year. The minister gave me 2 more years together with all other members. And the minister made an advert through the DTI. I applied like any other person because my rights that I should apply like any other person. I don't have to wait for the minister to give me the position. I applied, and out of the whole board, I succeeded with other new members. I applied for the second term, which is 5 years. I didn't apply for 2 years. I applied for 5 years. Now, if McPherson wants me to leave, I don't have a problem. I think I've saved the nation. I mean, we presented papers together in the gambling space. At least you have educated me. I am who I am because of your knowledge. And you might be who you are because of my experience and knowledge. If the minister says, Prof, your time has ended, I will also give him the answer I'm giving you, to say the term is 5 years. But if you want me to leave now, I will pack my things and go. NLC is not my baby. NLC is not my home. I mean, I've got qualifications. I can serve anywhere where the country wants me to serve. Well, if I did something wrong, fire me. It is allowed. You can fire a person. Say, no, go. So, in as far as the term, my friend McPherson, Honorable McPherson, that's my answer. And I'm not a lawyer, but I think on this one, lawyers beg me. Cyril Ramaphosa, President Cyril Ramaphosa, took over from Zuma, and he served the remainder of what the then president was serving. I don't think after this after the fifth year, Parliament is going to reduce 18 months from him. No. He must serve his own terms. Thus, I'm not an Englishman, but I think that's what I understand as what the dictionary says, what a term is. HCI, you are correct, McPherson, Honorable McPherson. We could have written a letter to the portfolio committee. Maybe it's our foresight, but we were communicating with the DTI. Even when we heard that the license is up for grab, we communicated with the DTI. That's the reason why we also went there as a friend of the court to put our view on the license. But I agree with you. I think, with your permission, Chairperson, maybe if there is an issue, let the NLC rise to the shareholder and also to Parliament, so that you don't get it from the media. I agree with you. We might have erred by not informing you, because there are a lot of allegations that were there. The media coverage is something that we are battling to find agreement with the media. And I think Honorable McPherson asked, okay, there are buildings, they are there. What has not been built? In the Limpopo project, there are two toilets out of 10. Two toilets which are not yet erected, because the department wrote a letter. The letter is, letters are there. Because the one which was supposed to be built at next to Ilim, Vaterfall, the chairperson of the governing body went in and started demolishing because they were looking for money, and the project was halted. So the two are still left, Honorable McPherson, but when it comes to Eastern Cape, all 10 buildings are there. That's why I asked the indulgence of the chairperson. We can even pay for the helicopter for members to go and there and compare what media is projecting about NLC. It's not a conspiracy theory. We will show you those buildings. Maybe the argument will be, does it cost this much? But well, we've got progress reports and the engineer certificate. I think, Honorable Buche, we can put the engineer certificate so that honorable members can see that it has been verified and signed. Let me tell you a joke, Honorable Chairperson. One journalist in Eastern Cape asked about the building of the boxing structure in somewhere in Eastern Cape, very far. When he wrote a wrong story, my spokesperson said, did you go and see the structure? He said, no, it is very far. I can read the WhatsApp. Yeah. He said, it is very far. 4 hours to go and 4 hours to come. Whose blame is for that? We can't be blamed. We gave the coordinate. The journalist didn't go. Now, when it comes to the list of beneficiaries, the legal and the advocate will give you an answer. But I think it's not as easy as you say, bring them. It's as difficult as understanding what the prescripts of the law, and we are not denying, apply through PAJA, then you can get the information. Over to members.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may, in terms of the integrated report and the publishing of the beneficiary list, in terms of the report itself, when NLC was preparing the report, we prepared it in line with National Treasury regulations, provisions in the PFMA, provisions in the Lotteries Act of what should be contained in the report. And the report you see before you has been prepared in terms of that legislation. In terms of excluding the beneficiary list, through our legal office and legal advice, we interrogated the various legislation, being PAYA, being BOPI, but also our very own Lotteries Act regulations, which actually prohibits the NLC from publishing information, Regulation 8. And based on, besides legislation, the NLC would have also received, so did the Portfolio Committee, the Minister, various complaints from beneficiaries who were subjected to extortion and they were being induced because their information and what was allocated was published, and for their safety. The NLC then took the decision to exclude this list, which can be requested in line with the relevant legislation and with consent from the beneficiaries.
Chair, thanks very much. I'm going to respond on the issue of Denze that Honorable McPherson has raised. Chair, through you, there's work that has been done around Denze, and the initial report was submitted through to the department, and we got a response back where additional work needs to be done and recommendations are made. And that's as far as we can report on that, to say there's work continuing, and the NLC will follow the instruction and the advice from the minister in terms of how to handle that particular issue. There was another question from one of the honourable members about whether the NLC does education and awareness. Chair, it's actually legislative. It's legislated, actually. The part of what we need to do as a commission is that there has to be education and awareness, and we need to report on that. So that is being done, and different areas are being targeted to ensure that the message of the NLC reaches not possible, but all the corners of South Africa, to ensure that our people understand the mandate of the NLC and how the NLC can assist them. There was another question dealing with illegal lotteries, to say who are these illegal lotteries.
Just to check, McPherson, are all your questions answered?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay, thanks. Okay, as long as they are answered, it's fine.
Thanks, Chair. The issue about, or the issue around illegal lotteries and who is licensing them. It's a bit of a complex matter, Chair. I mean, you start from your ordinary chances. People will open up your kiosk and shops around the corners and, you know, take bets from people when they are not authorized. And I think we've got systems to deal with that. But you've got more complicated and complex situations where provincial gambling boards would, license a bookmaker properly. You know, they would have a license. But as part of that license, because they are authorized to take bets on contingencies, now as part of that license, they would then take bets on the outcomes of lottery, you know, whether national or international, which according to the Lotteries Act, it's a criminal offense. It's unlawful. Now, we're still having debates around that. That is why we have a case now in Mpumalanga, where, you know, that is a lot of statement, where the gambling board in the province would have, properly licensed a lot of size a company. But part of what they're doing is that they are taking bets on the outcome of lotteries, which is an offense and which is an issue that we are dealing with. We even took that to court because we needed a clarity in terms of the understanding of the role and reach of provincial offices as against the mandate of the Lotteries Commission, which we said when we started, to say, you go to the Constitution, go to Schedule 4 of the Constitution, go to our own Lotteries Act. if indeed a bookmaker has to take bets on the outcome of contingencies, and the law says taking bets on the outcomes of lottery is unlawful, then they cannot take bets on the outcome of something that is unlawful, because then it means that particular contingency in law will then be unlawful. So, I mean, the matter went to court. We got judgment in April this year. What the judge said was that, look, you are an entity of government. You have an issue with the Provincial Gambling Board. We think you rushed to court. You should have followed the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act before coming to court, which we differ with, because we said, look, our difference is so fundamental because it's got to do with the interpretation of the law, and it's only the court that can assist us with that. So we are appealing that matter, but we think clarity on that particular issue will assist us as we engage with provincial gambling boards to say, look, these are the lines. You know, once you cross this line, then you go into a different area that by law and in terms of the constitution belongs to the Lotteries Commission. Chair, there was a question again about who gets funded. I did not get the question properly, but I just need to clarify this. On an annual basis, the NLC goes out and meets its stakeholders, you know, NPOs, community-based organizations, all organizations that assist and work with NPOs and you know, community-based structures. And out of that, and looking at the national development plan as well, the research will be done and issues will be brought to the board to say, for instance, 2018-2019, these are the key critical issues that we need to be focusing on. So we call those priority areas. So annually, you know, we go out to our communities to say, before you apply, just make sure that you fall within the category of priority areas, because we're coming from a system, Chair, where, you know, people could apply for everything. So you could not even calculate impact because you fund as application comes. So this process now streamlines you know, the funding, and then the NLC can then come back and say, look, we've got impact because this is what we targeted, and these are the results. Chair, okay, let me just take the last one before Commissioner, about the issue of funding of emerging entrepreneurs. Now, this is quite critical because when you look at the current legislative framework, the NLC cannot fund for-profit organizations. Even organs of state have now been excluded, except if you are an educational institution or you are an educational institution or there's another category. But I'll get that. Yeah. So if you are for-profit, you cannot be funded. We've been getting these questions quite a lot from cooperatives that said, look, if you look at what the NLC intends to do in terms of social upliftment, you have cooperatives that could do the same. But unfortunately, in terms of the current framework as it is, for-profit organizations are not funded. Thanks.
The issue is...
While they're still caucusing, Chairperson, my secretary is reminding me here for record purposes. Honorable McPherson said my term ended in August. I don't know. I'm still the chairperson of the NLC until end of November. Otherwise, honorable members might think that I'm here illegally. the shareholder is here. Well, maybe there's another letter, Tommy. Is there another letter?
You want to comment on that?
Yes, the chairperson is looking at me, so... I just want to confirm, chairperson, that the chair, this one of the Lotteries Board is correct. The current term ends at the end of this month. It didn't end in August.
Let me just say, on our program, 20th of November this year is the date where we have scheduled interviewing of the nominated candidates for the position of the chairperson of the National Lotteries Commission's board. So that's what we have on our program as a committee. So department and ministry are our way. I'm just saying when we get to that process, we'll then be able to engage. But thanks for the addition, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Let me just take the last points. One is just a quick clarification on the E2BA and HCI issue. And it is just for you know, purpose of clarity. I think there was discussion already around, you know, the NLC not having maybe reported this to the committee. Now, Chair, the issue of E2BA and HCI is a contractual matter between the two parties. It stems from the funding arrangements when E2BA was licensed to run the National Lottery. And obviously they had conditions there that they agreed between themselves. But as the NLC, and that's why the NLC had to come in and explain its role as the regulator. Now, if you look at the current license, if at any point, as a license operator, if at any point there's threat to control of the running of the National Lottery, any control, any element of control, would have to go through the process of the board, recommendation to the minister, and the minister must approve that. And what the NLC had to do was just to come in court and say, we understand you have an issue, you've got clauses in your own agreements that talks about taking over or, you know, getting into the shoes of one or more parties or the parties. As the regulator, just be aware that there's clause 43.2 in the license that says that can only happen once the minister is authorized that control. And that is purely what the NLC had to do. And obviously, at this stage, the NLC will await any application from the licensed operator if it does come, and it will be taken through the license conditions. Okay. Last question, Chair. There was a request to clarify the issue of proactive funding. Or funding, proactive funding. Let me just say funding or proactive funding. Now, when I was making a presentation, I said, ordinarily, if an NPO, NPC, or public benefit trust needs money, it will submit an application through to the NLC, so application-based, as long as currently they fall within the necessary priority areas that I've just explained. Now, proactive funding was introduced by Section 283 of the current Lotteries Act, the amended one, and it said, look, you know, NLC, your application-based process is still going to go through, but there's an exception. You know, and this exception say, look, the minister, the board, or the commission could, based on research, fund worthy good causes without following the prescribed process. Meaning, the minister could come and say, look, there's a disaster in a particular area, there's no water, or, you know, there was wind, it destroyed people's houses. Can you go there and intervene? So it allows the commission to be able to intervene without having to follow this prescribed process. And just to state this for the purposes of the committee, proactive funding only amounts to 10% of the total budget. So it's very small, it's very little if you just compare. So 90% of the funds will still go to your normal applications. It's only 10% that actually gets used for proactive funding. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Okay,
Chair, just quickly, I think it's three questions that I'm also passionate about. Honourable Member got to ask about the NGOs, especially those that are in distress. So there's a lot of them. We indicated that we get to distribute, and I think our CFO spoke to the fund that has been distributed in the previous financial year, would have been around 1.3 billion. We receive applications with an ask of close to 17 billion. In a year. So necessarily there is more demand and supply is very little. Hence earlier as well there was a discussion around society lotteries that besides empowering beneficiaries to be sustainable, we usually say to them as you are waiting, this is what can happen. Two honorable members also got to ask, the question was almost the same, about how these beneficiaries necessarily get to be funded, say, year on year, and why are others suffering? The legislation is clear that there has to be a cooling off period if we have funded in this financial year, unlike what used to happen previously, where applicants or our beneficiaries would submit, say, 3 applications in every sector and get funded, excluding or pushing other needy organizations outside. The Act is clear that there should be a 12-month cooling off period that is observed. So in terms of trying to capacitate them, that's how we then get to introduce and train them on society lotteries. The other one was about prioritizing women in gaming. Off the record, the group CEO of Ituba and myself spent time discussing this, and I think when you get to Ituba's annual report, you can see the initiatives that are in place meant to empower women, and with the NLC necessarily, I think as the new RFP would be coming, surely 3-4 years from now, it's an area that even previously the board got to focus on. It is a very important issue and very close to our hearts. There was the last one on sports gaming and how it is regulated. I'm not sure whether the chair got an answer on that one. And the second one, honourable member, on how beneficiaries are determined in rural areas. We go out to train them because the Act requires us to fund NPOs, NGOs, NPC, and community trusts. So we try to hold them by hand and actually make sure that, unfortunately, our funding is application-based, except for the proactive funding, which also has those stringent measures in terms of what should be followed before a project can be funded. Thank you, Chair. I just thought that one on sports gaming maybe is the only one that we necessarily didn't respond to. Not sure whether it's Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think there were 2 other questions that I would like to address, Chair. One was, how do we empower, or rather the emerging entrepreneurs? If you look at our procurement strategy as well, there are huge opportunities there as well from our side, in that we, in terms of the preferential procurement regulations, we can target specific designated groups, which are women, business owned by women, businesses owned by youth, business owned by those with disabilities, and in general owned by black people. And if you look at the annual report, you will also see the figures of what we would have achieved in the past 7 years as well. And we think that as well, if you look at our strategy on how we focus on empowering entrepreneurs in the provinces as well, it really does go a long way. So please do look at that. And I think there was a question around the 6 billion that sits in the fund and why the fund is still there. I take it that the fund that was referred to by the member is the trust fund. In the fund, the fund is established basically by the National Lotteries Act, and this fund is keeping monies that we get from the operator with the same funds are then funded for our own operations, and the remainder of that balance then goes to the beneficiaries. At this point, I think we talked to the figures earlier on. We don't sit with 6 billion. I think the 6 billion was in the past when we had the challenges that Chairman referred to earlier on. At this moment, we are running very low on what we are what we remain as payable to beneficiaries, and the actual investments that we have are basically in line with what the board would have approved as what is sufficient for us to have enough money should there be any disturbances with the operator, and that is sitting at 1.5 billion. So we really distribute as we receive funds from the operator. Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. And there's the last one, the Honourable Member is not here, of explaining, Chair, the relationship between the DTI, our shareholder, the National Lotteries Commission and the board, and the distributing agencies, which are the committees that gets to adjudicate on the projects. The one side of the organization as stipulated in legislation are administrators. That's why it becomes difficult when we are linked with how maybe members in the organization are linked with the monies. We have a team of distributing agencies who get to adjudicate the project, and our systems are automated, Chair. I think from 2001 we can actually extract any project and tell you who was the beneficiary and who were the other members in the team, and so that information is readily available, but in terms of the legislation, we account and report to the Department of Trade and Industry. Thank you, Chair.
I hope that all the questions were responded to. Can I just say we would actually then create the what I'll call an abusive space, because we have responded already to questions. One was actually thinking it may be a bit of a responsibility to say, can we get you to do that in writing? Because just for our records, it helps a great deal in, on the basis of the responses you've just given us, because I think meeting you for the first time and actually in the new term of office, that's actually quite strategic and very important. I'm not sure how much time you will need to do that. Maybe I can say in the next 2 weeks, if you can actually give us that feedback. You have actually spoken to responses to the questions that we have asked. So just for the record, I think it might help a great deal to have that. So I think maybe because most of the time when the bell stops now, which means the parliamentary session is starting. But I think because we know that the senior officials that are here from the NLC actually have prepared a lot, they got here, they spoke to us. So if members want to actually engage, we never actually not allow that to happen. So on the basis of actually making sure that we respect you, and just on the contribution and impact of being able to get the whole team here, I think it's most appreciated by us as a committee. And we actually would like to acknowledge that. But for members of the committee, thanking the Prof. Chairperson and the team, I thought maybe we'll then make an announcement. The committee had to look at the minutes. I'm sure that is postponed. We will be sitting tomorrow at Committee Room 3. It's 90 Plain Street. The meeting will be 9:30 to 1:30, as we try to do today, which is actually the training, which actually will be taking place tomorrow as part of what we did last Wednesday, I think, because that's the last presentation we had. So can we actually then try and conclude our meeting by asking you to have a safe trip back home, and hoping that we don't actually have a long time, which is more than a year, before we interact. So, but at this stage, we think the presentation, the information and responses is most appreciated. So can we actually close our meetings? Are members comfortable to do that? So the meeting is adjourned, because there's no dispute, and there's no one who's saying, no, we can't proceed. Thank you very much. Okay.